Welcome to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. and along with my brother Rick, we examine current events in the light of God's prophetic word. This week, I'm in Eastern Europe in the country of Montenegro. Rick, you and I have been coming here for years to prepare the teams to do work amongst the local body of believers here in a country that has very few believers. And we're using sports, English, music, arts and crafts, everything that we can to use that as a tool to help share the gospel of Christ in Nikšić, Montenegro. Rick, I'm going to have to ask you to do the heavy lifting this week. We've got a lot to cover with our regular broadcast partners, Ken Timmerman and David Dolan. And this week, we're bringing former sheriff of Milwaukee County in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, prophecy teacher and pastor who was at the Republican National Convention all week. He's going to give us a special report, Dr. Richard Schmidt. Rick, let's get started with our first, Ken Timmerman.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. I have Ken Timmerman with us. He's the one we go to when we want to get a look at politics taking place around the world. He's an author and an analyst. You can find out more about him by going to his website at kentimmerman.com. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Rick, it's always a pleasure.
Well, as always, Ken, there's so much news taking place around the world. We'll start with something that just happened yesterday. They're calling it the blue screen of death, a worldwide IT outage. Can you tell us a little bit about that kind of late-breaking story?
Pretty amazing events, Rick. You had airplanes that were ordered to stay in the air, not to land, because the air traffic control systems were down. You had supermarkets that couldn't check people out, stores closed, and shopping malls. There was even a guy in India at an airport who boarded his aircraft with a handwritten boarding pass because the systems to print the boarding passes were down. Look, all of this appears to have come from a software update from CrowdStrike, a cybersecurity firm servicing Microsoft systems. It did not affect Mac systems, so I was not personally affected. I use Mac. But look, in Amsterdam, Schiphol Airport, which is one of the largest airports in the world, was frozen for hours on Friday morning. And this, Rick, was just an accident. It was just a glitch. It was not even a cyber attack. Just imagine, given how totally dependent we are on these invisible electronic systems, what would have happened, the chaos that would have ensued if this had actually been done by some global nefarious actor. The world would have been in total chaos.
Well, it certainly would be, and we look at that situation, that's just a reality of our highly interconnected world nowadays. Well, let's move from that late-breaking story to the biggest story of the week, and this happened shortly after we concluded our program last week, and that was the attempted assassination of former President Trump. The would-be assassin took a shot at President Trump, and they just barely nicked his ear and avoided catastrophe. If you could, we haven't talked to you about this. I know you put out an email on this situation, but give us your thoughts on that attempt on President Trump's life.
Well, just barely nicked his ear. Rick, if President Trump had not turned his head in the split second before the shots went off, they would have blown his brains out. And he knew that. He gave an amazing acceptance speech on Thursday night at the Republican National Convention, where he described in great detail the events in Pennsylvania, at that rally in Pennsylvania. And Rick, he said what I believed as well, and I sent out an email about this on Monday. He was saved by the grace of God. It was the protection of the Lord God Almighty. It certainly was not the Secret Service that protected him. I think that's pretty clear now to everybody. Donald Trump was protected by divine intervention, and we all need to get down on our knees and pray and acknowledge that.
Well, Ken, I think what's even more alarming is the fact that this assassination almost succeeded in the fact of what was supposed to be increased protection around former President Trump, because there was intel that there is an Iranian plot to assassinate President Trump.
The Iranians have been threatening to assassinate Trump, vowing to assassinate Trump since January of 2020, just weeks after the United States took out Qasem Soleimani, one of the world's biggest terrorists, the head of the Quds Force, the Revolutionary Guards Expeditionary Overseas unit that basically helps Hamas, helps Hezbollah, causes civil wars in countries far and wide, and murders Iranians and murders Jews around the world. So we took out Soleimani, and the Iranians said, we're going to take out President Trump. I can tell you something about this, Rick, because I was actually involved with the FBI in conveying threat information that I gathered from my Iranian sources who warned me of the Iranian efforts to take out President Trump, to assassinate President Trump. And I conveyed those threats to the FBI, and they pursued those quite actively for quite some time. Now, I've heard the White House recently saying that they took all of these threats very, very seriously, and they were pursuing it. They were continuing to pursue the Iranian efforts to assassinate Trump. And I can tell you that's simply not true. The FBI shut me down and shut down all the sources that I was working with at the end of 2021, early 2022, and they have not shown any interest to go back to those sources to learn more about the Iranian plot to take out President Trump. And one more thing about this, Rick, very interesting. The interim foreign minister in Iran was interviewed on Western television and said, well, of course, we were not involved. We would like to bring Donald Trump to justice, but we want to use legal and judicial means to do so. And everybody took that to mean that they were not harboring violent intentions about Donald Trump. That is simply not true. It is a misunderstanding of Islam, and it is a misunderstanding of the Iranian system. When Ayatollah Khamenei issues a fatwa, that is a juridical death sentence. It is a juridical call to murder of Donald Trump. So when the foreign minister says, oh, well, we just want to use juridical means, that means they want to murder Donald Trump. It doesn't mean we don't want to commit violence. It means we believe we are doing justice through Islamic law. You need to understand that. Islamic law, a fatwa under Islamic law, is a juridical sentence. And that's what they have issued against Donald Trump.
Well, that's a very important piece of context you give us there. And let's continue to talk, Ken, about Iran. And they have a new president. Many say a more moderate president than the last president. But there are others that are saying that he is just a front for the religious leadership there, a front to basically make nice with the West. Can you talk about this?
He is clearly a front for the religious leadership. Don't forget, elections in Iran are selections by the leadership. They vet the candidates, they select which candidates are allowed to run, and they have systematically disqualified anyone who challenges the system. So the new president, Masoud Pezeshkian, who's a cardiac surgeon, but also a member of parliament, he has shown up in parliament, this moderate new president, in his Islamic Revolutionary Guards uniform. He does that from time to time just to remind people that he's an IRGC member. And he has pledged to follow Khamenei's policies. He will follow Khamenei's policies. While he claims that he thinks that Iran should have better relations with the West, what they're really looking for, and Khamenei as well, is a relief from U.S. sanctions, from international sanctions. So that is going to be his objective, is to get sanctions relief. But I can tell you, it may happen under the Biden administration. Remember, they have not enforced the oil sanctions put in place by President Trump. So Iran's oil exports have skyrocketed from 400,000 barrels a day in December of 2020 at the end of Donald Trump's presidency to 2 million barrels plus today, most of that going to communist China. So those sanctions are not in place, but there's still other sanctions that are hurting the economy. He wants to get rid of them. It may happen with Biden. But when Donald Trump comes back to office, which I believe he will reimpose the maximum pressure campaign on the Iranian regime. And I believe there will be a distinct change of policy in the White House towards the Iranian regime.
Well, Ken, there have always been stark differences between the way the Biden and the Trump administration deal with Iran. Well, let's move on, and we'll look at Russia right now in response to the United States putting conventional long-range weapons into Europe. Russia is playing the nuclear card.
They are now saying that they are going to start building medium-range nuclear missiles, these missiles that had been forbidden by the INF treaty, but the U.S. pulled out of that treaty because of Russian cheating in 2019. So the Russians are now going to launch full-scale production of those missiles, and they're threatening to install them in Kaliningrad. Kaliningrad is that Russian enclave inside Germany on the Baltic Sea coast. It is heavily fortified. They've been building up those fortifications over the past decade, really. But this is another step I believe installing these nuclear missiles is another step in the gradual escalation, I think, that is leading us to a Guns of August situation where the world just stumbles into World War III.
I do remember you talked about that last week as well. And this, my next and last story, maybe can contribute to that as well. It looks like there are those that are calling for a quote-unquote true European defense union. And essentially, the Kremlin and Vladimir Putin are looking at that as a call to militarization, this inexorable march that you're talking about. Can you talk about this?
This is something that von der Leyen, the current president of the European Union, who won a second term, she says, this will be the goal of my second term, will be to create this defense union in the EU. Look, they already have NATO, but they want to have some form of European defense that does not include the United States. These types of efforts have been launched in the past. The French generally are behind them. They've never worked before, and they've never worked for two reasons. One, the Europeans do not have enough weaponry to actually be able to defend themselves. And the second reason, even more important, is because they don't have the money to build the weapons to defend themselves, and they're not willing to tax themselves to increase their defense spending because they're spending everything on social welfare and on illegal immigrants who are sucking up their social systems. So I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but it has succeeded in angering the Russians, in provoking the Russians. And for that reason, I think it's a very unwise thing to have done, especially since Ursula von der Leyen herself knew that Europe does not have the capability to pull this off.
You've been listening to Ken Timmerman reporting for Prophecy Today. He does it from his home in France, and he comes to us every week. We appreciate what you do. Again, if you want to find out more about Ken, you could go to his website, kentimmerman.com. Ken, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Rick. God bless.
Great job as always, Ken. Well, we got to take a break, and when we come back, our Middle East news update with David Dolan, right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. It's a week since former U.S. President Donald Trump was almost killed in an assassination attempt Saturday. Trump is the Republican candidate in this year's U.S. presidential election. For American citizens, it was a shocking moment, but for military service members, law enforcement, and veterans, the attack uniquely impacted them. More information continues to come out about the leadership and security errors that failed to stop the attack. Steve Prince with Warrior Set Free says it's a critical reminder to be praying for our law enforcement and military.
So when we pray for law enforcement and you think about the worst places at the worst times, that's where they have to be. Pray for divine protection. Pray for divine decision making. Pray for them to be alert.
Meanwhile, drugs and alcohol define a lot of lives on the Northridge Reservation. Distribution is bold and relentless, and too many people have decided there is no reason to go on living. Yet a recent visit by the On Eagles Wings team injected hope. Ron Hutchcraft of Hutchcraft Ministries says that's the point of the On Eagles Wings Summer of Hope outreach, introducing desperate people to the hope of Christ.
Hope is defiant confidence. In the most brutal winter days, you have this defiant confidence that says there's going to be flowers sometime here soon. That's kind of a picture of hope. In terms of reaching out to Native America, where hope is so rare.
From July 6th to August 1st, dozens of Native American Christians are sharing their hope stories on reservations throughout the United States. Pray many lives will change as a result. Thank you for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. We're listeners supported by people like you. Join us here on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, LinkedIn. You can now also find us on Alexa, iTunes, or TWR360. Together, the Great Commission happens. Look for the links at missionnews.org. That's missionnews.org. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today Radio, the program that looks at current events in the light of Bible prophecy. This is the portion of our program. It's called our Middle East News Update. We look at news coming out of the Middle East in general, but Israel in particular. To do that, we have a journalist with us who has over 30 years of experience reporting in Israel, Dave Dolan. Dave, thanks for being with us today.
It's good to be with you, Rick. Thank you.
Well, Dave, as always, you give us an update, letting us know in general what's going on. What's the latest right now in Israel?
Well, in essence, another war front has opened up, although it's not new. We know that Yemen has been firing missiles and drones at Israel since the start of the Gaza war last October. In fact, over 200, they say, the IDF says, have been fired at Israel, most of them taken out by the U.S. and British forces down in the Red Sea area, but several have come into Israel and been taken out there. Well, early Friday morning, just after 3, a Houthi drone came into Israel from the Mediterranean, from the west, and struck an apartment building in Tel Aviv, very close to the U.S. embassy there. And many Israeli analysts believe that was the target of the drone, but it hit the building. There was a Russian immigrant who was the maintenance man in the apartment building, lived in a room on the roof. He was killed by shrapnel from it. 10 of the residents of the building were wounded. They've all now been taken home from hospital, but it shattered windows and did a lot of damage. The Houthis claimed it, said it was theirs. The Samid 3, it's a suicide drone, meaning it doesn't carry missiles or something. It isn't meant to come back home. It's meant to explode and destroy something. And a U.S. ambassador to Israel, Jack Lew, said he was shocked by this brazen Houthi drone attack on Tel Aviv. And the Israeli leadership said that they may well reply, and they will reply, they said, but they may well do it on Yemeni territory. So take the fight down to them. Of course, Israel has that ability with their long-range aircraft and some other things. Of course, that would be in coordination with the U.S. and Britain and others that are in that fight. So that was something. And Rick, they now believe the drone came over 1,600 miles. It went west over the Sinai Peninsula. The Egyptians didn't spot it, but it was spotted by the IDF 7 minutes before it crashed. Some people on the beach even took phone video of it coming in over the off of the water, off of the ocean. And why it wasn't taken down is a mystery. But the Houthis say it has new technology that makes it very, very hard to detect. So, of course, an investigation will go on that whole situation. Meanwhile, we had more action in Gaza during the week. We had last Saturday a strike on several Hamas leaders, including possibly Mohammed Diouf, who's the second in command. He's the military commander of Hamas overall. They've been wanting to get him for many, many years, Rick, but we haven't had a confirmation that he was killed. We know another Hamas leader with him was a military leader was killed for sure. That's been confirmed. And on Friday, the IDF said it had killed the Hamas intelligence chief, Hamad Hamadia. So if so, that is a major strike. There was also, of course, still fighting in Gaza. Prime Minister Netanyahu went down there on Thursday, his first visit in Gaza since the start of the war, at least in the war zone itself. He's been along the border. This was down in Rafah. He met with the troops and said the war will continue until Hamas is defeated. Also yesterday, Rick, we had the International Court of Justice in The Hague issue its ruling on Israel's legality, if you will, in existing, but certainly in, quote, occupying the occupied Palestinian territories. Well, that's what they call it, the occupied Palestinian territory. So obviously their view is already known. But they voted 11-4 to condemn Israel, to call it to immediately or as soon as possible, they said, pull all Israelis, all Jews, out of not only all of Judea and Samaria, that would, of course, include Israel's second holiest site on earth in Hebron, but also from East Jerusalem, from all of East Jerusalem, where there's about 450,000 Israelis living. So that would be a major move. The announcement was made by Nawaf Salem. He's the head of the court. And by the way, Rick, he's Lebanese, a Lebanese Muslim. He was their UN ambassador for 10 years. He's voted over 200 times during that period against Israel, resolutions condemning Israel. So this is not anything new. Prime Minister Netanyahu and other leaders reacted very, very strongly. I just want to quote Netanyahu, the Jewish people are not occupiers in their own land, including in our eternal capital, Jerusalem, nor in Judea and Samaria, our historical homeland. No absurd opinion in The Hague can deny this historical truth or the legal right of Israelis to live in their own communities in our ancestral home. So obviously stressing the fact that this is Israel's ancient homeland, not just a modern invention. And of course, its heart, as he said, was Judea and Samaria. And they're now worried, Rick, that the ICJ will take this to the UN or to the International Criminal Court. That's another option. And they know it will affect trade negatively. The Israelis do. They know it will affect relations with their friends. And they're very concerned that it may give more fuel for Prime Minister Netanyahu's upcoming visit to Washington next week to the Biden administration, calling for a two-state solution and, you know, basically demanding that be the case, which, of course, Israel strongly opposes. And in fact, Rick, just one last thing, on Tuesday, they voted overwhelmingly in the Knesset against a Palestinian state. It was 68 against and 9 in favor, with most of the other Knesset members staying away from the vote. They just didn't want to say yes or no either way. So it's opposed by the Israeli public, and this court ruling coming in the midst of a war that's escalating is concerning, to say the least.
It certainly is, David. Well, let me follow up on one of the things you talked about earlier. You talked about the Houthis. They're sending drones 1,600 miles to attack Israel. There was a casualty involved there. Israel was, for some reason, unable to stop that. We talk about Hezbollah in the north. We talk about the war with Hamas. And these are all Iranian-backed proxies. We know that Iran is the sworn enemy of Israel, even though maybe the war in Gaza is kind of winding down right now. It certainly is reasonable to think that this area is still a powder keg and this war could escalate at any time, couldn't it?
Well, Rick, what the IDF has always worried about for many years now is this multi-front barrage of rockets and, you know, the missiles and drones, et cetera, that they would be launched at once at the same time from four or five locations, thousands of them, tens of thousands maybe. This, of course, is possible. Hezbollah has the largest Iranian-backed drone force of all the proxy forces. We know that, 150,000 maybe rockets or more, very trained fighters who've been in combat in recent years in Syria. So that's a worry. But Yemen, we have another concern, Rick, that was published this week. It now seems like Russia is supplying weapons to the Houthi rebels. Russia itself is. Putin himself is. And, of course, this comes as Russia's relations with Iran continue to be strengthened. And, by the way, we had the announcement from the White House that the Iranians could, Anthony Blinken said it, could have a bomb within 2 weeks. If they decided to do that, that's the stage of development readiness that they're at now, he warned. And he said the talks are not going very well there. Now, he did say the hostage talks over Gaza are moving along. He said we're only 10 yards away from the final goal. But he noted that usually the last 10 yards of any attempt to get a goal are the hardest, are the most resisted. And I can tell you that there's no sign that there's any imminent a breakthrough on that issue. But the Israelis are very concerned about this multi-front war that continues to develop. And again, that Iran might give the order for thousands of Iraqi rockets, thousands of rockets from Yemen and from the from Lebanon and Syria all come in at once one day. And no, their systems could not prevent many of them from getting in. The Iron Dome is magnificent, and David's sling and the other things are wonderful, but they're not foolproof. And the determination of Iran, and again, if Russia is getting directly involved, biblical prophecy forming again, it is a very bad sign, and the Israelis are in real danger. The war is not over, Rick. It's not in any way over, and we had more attacks on Friday in the north, and et cetera, et cetera.
David Doling reported to us on what is taking place in Israel. As he mentioned, these things setting the stage for what Bible prophecy say is going to happen in the future. We keep an eye on them in the present as we look to see what is taking place in the Middle East and Israel in particular. David, as always, we appreciate your report. Thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
You're very welcome, Rick. God bless.
Well, we're going to take a break right now on Prophecy Today Radio. When we come back, we're going to have Pastor Rich Schmidt. He was at the Republican National Convention. He has a report for us. That's all right ahead for you right here on Prophecy Today Radio.
Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. Turkey's latest incursion in northern Iraq neutralized at least 11 members of the Kurdistan Workers Party, or PKK. Listed as a terror group by Turkey and the U.S., the PKK has killed more than 40,000 people, including civilians, in nearly 40 years of fighting with the Turkish government. Samuel, with Redemptive Stories, says PKK camps are Turkey's primary focus, so Christians aren't directly in the line of fire. Pray believers will have spirit-led boldness to proclaim the gospel in the midst of strife. Then, leaders from Christian women in Iran reveal the despair gripping the nation. People are trapped with no prospects or jobs in a worsening mental health crisis. Transform Iran's program called Pearl of Persia shares the hope of Christ with victims of trauma, abuse, addiction, and prostitution. People who respond to the program have a chance to receive counseling from trained Christians. Find your place in the story at missionnews.org. You're listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. Along with my brother Rick, we examine current events in the light of God's prophetic word. What an exciting time to be alive, Rick. And I know that we talked about the blue screen effect that took place, and just so happens I was in the air when that all took place.
Oh, that's right, Jimmy. I didn't even think about that. We're looking at this situation. You were in the air. Now you're flying to Montenegro. You're working in a ministry that we've been working with, I think, all the way since 15 years ago now. Back in 2009 was the first time we went. So a great ministry, a youth ministry. You work towards kids. And I assume you made it okay and didn't get stuck in the airport.
Yeah, it was fine, but it was interesting. Landing in Vienna, we started our phones, started getting text messages about this cyber issue that took place in the United States. So we were already on this side of the ocean in Eastern Europe, Vienna, and then coming into Montenegro. And Rick, you're right. It's been a while, and we've been doing this ministry. It's a country that so severely needs the Lord. About 400 Christians total in the whole country of 800,000, 880,000, former part of the original Yugoslavia. And we're working right alongside the believers that are here, a local community, using sports and all kinds of things, English, art, giving the gospel message, bringing young people to give them an opportunity to come on to the field to see God work. And that's really our passion. We love talking about Bible prophecy, but we really need to put, you know, what we understand in the urgency of the hour. And this is why we do this. Well, and I'll give you a chance later on to, you know, to help us out if you would like to do that. But Rick, I know this last week has been crazy. All of us were watching a lot of people were watching the Republican National Convention. And great to have our good friend, Dr. Richard Schmidt, back with us on the program this week to help us to, and he was there to help us to understand what took place as things were unfolding there.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. As we continue to look at the political, because it is setting the stage for the prophetic to be fulfilled, we have Pastor Rich Schmidt with us. He's the pastor of Union Grove Baptist Church. He's the head of Prophecy Focus Ministries, and he's the former sheriff of Milwaukee County. He joins us regularly. He's a good friend of both yours and mine, and he's been at the Republican National Convention there in Milwaukee this week. He's going to give us a report on that. Rich, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I just got through with four extremely exciting days and happy to share some of the things that I was able to see there.
Well, Rich, before I get you to talk about what you witnessed there at the RNC this past week, I'd like to get you to talk a little bit about your testimony. We'd like to, for our listeners, to get to know you a little bit better. You went from a career in law enforcement, very interesting, a career in law enforcement. You were actually the sheriff of Milwaukee County. Now you are the pastor of a large and growing church there, and you are also the head of a ministry focused on Bible prophecy. This very interesting testimony that you have. Could I get you to share that with our listeners?
Well, sure. I'd love to do that. Actually, it's kind of in reverse. I started out in Christian work. I came to Milwaukee, Wisconsin after finishing up seminary and so forth. And my wife and I came here with our two young children and started planning a church, which was successful in getting that done. The thing when you're a church planner, here's kind of how the law enforcement angle came in. To be straightforward, it doesn't pay real well. In fact, you can starve to death if you're not working. So bottom line is the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office was hiring, and we were having getting ready for our third child, and my wife kind of pushed the concept that we need insurance. That's really the simplicity of how I ended up applying for the government job with the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office. So quite frankly, I've been bivocational, if you will, almost my entire adult life. So totally involved in church work and church planting. I was an associate pastor also during that time, as well as doing a 32-year career with the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office, where the Lord blessed, and I went from, if you will, being a first-line deputy and ended up, by the end of the career, spending a year and a half as the acting sheriff of Milwaukee County. So it's amazing how God worked the schedules out. I was able to accomplish both things, and just praise the Lord for his faithfulness to allow me to do all that and work these schedules out.
Well, Rich, we're happy to have you on the program today. One of the things I mentioned earlier is that you were at the Republican National Convention. Now, leading up to this particular convention, several extraordinary events, beginning with the debate between former President Trump and President Biden. And the main story coming out of that debate was President Biden seemingly confused, maybe a decline in his cognitive ability. And that has been a big story in the last few weeks. And then, of course, last Saturday, right after this program aired last week, the assassination attempt on President Trump. So leading up to this convention, these things taking place, I'm sure it set the stage for a very interesting convention. If you could give us a report on what you saw this week.
Well, as you stated, I had the wonderful privilege of being with a group called VCY America out of Milwaukee. It's actually a nationwide radio and TV outlet, and I was literally their anchor on TV for the 4 days. I was able to be involved in the entire convention. I did multiple interviews of politicians and individuals in ministry, and it was just absolutely phenomenally great. But let's go into the convention room, where many folks, of course, watched on television or listened on radio. It was absolutely electric. I mean, you had 50,000 people that were involved in this. Just walking out into the Pfizer Forum and seeing the people, and it looked like uniform sections. You looked over at Texas, they all had on their white cowboy hats, and it's just an electric experience. People are pumped up. Obviously, they're there because they love President Trump. They wanted to make sure that the delegates got out their votes for President Trump, and of course, he overwhelmingly was nominated to be the president. I watched as it was just an electric moment again when President Trump is on stage. The crowd erupts, just absolutely thrilled about what's taking place, and he accepted the nomination to be the president. So it obviously is a very, very partisan event that takes place at the Republican National Convention, the same thing that will happen with the Democrats. But you mentioned about the cognitive decline of President Biden. Just real quick, I'd like to say that those of us and yourself that watch a great deal of conservative programming and news, this is something that we've known about for several years. It's amazing, this decline, if you will, that unfortunately President Biden is facing with his cognitive abilities. I had predicted 2 years ago openly that I didn't see him making it all the way to the presidential finish, if you will. That still remains to be seen. Two news outlets came out yesterday with reports that they had news that he was going to be stepping down soon. The Biden administration got a hold of those clips and has denied that's taking place. But looking back to the convention, President Trump was electric. He was strong. He came out much, much different last night. And, of course, he didn't speak the first 3 days, made appearances. But when he did speak, it was just an absolutely different, somber type of situation. which I've never seen from him before. The first thing he said when he came out, and which actually shocked me, he stated he's going to tell the story about the assassination attempt once, and it's so painful that he will never do it again. That was just an extremely powerful moment. His demeanor was so sober. I mean, there was no name calling, no strength like he sometimes does with almost satire. He was very, very directed in what he did the entire speech. So I appreciated that, and the people felt the extreme passion that he had. He put it out there that obviously he could have died. It was a millimeter away from killing him. And he just, his resolve was when he felt the bullet, he knew exactly what had happened in his mind. He drops to the floor, Secret Service covers him. And he's stated, you know, blood is flowing everywhere. He didn't say he was scared. He said he felt an incredible peace because he knew God was there. And that was a powerful moment from a Christian standpoint. Immediately, just to get to the end of the story, what the president said was somehow he was able to look out and see the faces of the people in the crowd. And he knew they were scared. He knew they didn't know if he was dead or alive. So he did what, of course, is now on every paper and magazine in the country, in the world. He forces himself, gets himself stood up with the Secret Service help. He raises his fist in defiance of the assassination attempt and yells three times, fight, fight, fight. And it just was a very, very moving moment. And that's what made this, and it's I almost get emotional talking about it because it was that powerful. Here's a man that almost lost his life and says, listen, I'm here to fight for you. Massive, massive movement among the people, tears everywhere, shouting everywhere. Just an incredible, incredible speech.
Well, I'm sure it was a very powerful speech following on the heels, as it did, of that assassination attempt. You said because of all the events taking place before this, this was almost like a once-in-a-lifetime event that you were able to attend. We appreciate you reporting on it for us. And, you know, why a prophecy program is reporting on what took place at the Republican National Convention? Well, as we say, the political setting the stage for the prophetic to be fulfilled. The presidential race in the United States, and they call that the person who is the president of the United States, they call them the leader of the free world. And it certainly is going to influence the world events and things that are happening around the world. The foreign policy of the president of the United States, especially as it concerns Israel and what happens to the Jewish people, but around the world, the situation in Russia, the situation in China, all these nations that we talk about on a weekly basis and how they are lining up, setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled. If you could talk a little bit about how on an international level, what was said there at that convention and how a Trump administration would be influential, especially as we look at this with an eye to Bible prophecy.
Well, I can sum it up. Believe it or not, it's an extremely easy question to answer. One of the third day, the entire focus was on making America strong again. President Trump, and again, very clearly made it stated last night that strength is what will stop the conflicts in the Middle East, in Ukraine, all the different things that the wars and so forth. He's very concerned. He brought that up about World War III starting. Of course, when we look at the prophetic nexus, we're talking about countries, empires that will eventually have a major effect on a prophetic scale. So he did talk about Israel and Hamas. He very strong that if when he becomes president, he's stating that he will shut this war down quickly. He will get the 8 American hostages that are still held in Gaza released, and just very, very strong. He talked about Iran, which of course is a powerhouse in when it comes militarily and threat wise, and again from a terrorist situation. Again, he made it absolutely perfectly clear worldwide you mess with America, you're going to pay. It's going to happen. And it was just a message of America will be strong, which is very interesting because, again, as you often point out, Bible prophecy never talks about the United States of America in Bible prophecy. It's just not stated. And the good news, I guess, for us as current people living before the rapture of the church takes place, we want strength in our military. We want security. And, of course, we all want that. We all want peace. His message, which seems antithetical to strength, is he wants peace in the world. And the way you get peace in the world is through, if you will, flexing your muscles as hard as you can, scaring the fire out of the other countries, and basically making it known the last 4 years administration, which has weakened our military, weakened the number of soldiers, weakened our army, our Navy, and Air Force. We've lost equipment. We've lost soldiers. That is as far as numbers go. And he was very, very strong on we're going to build the military to bring strength back. One thing that I think is very interesting when it comes to Iran is Iran still has a bounty on President Trump and Mike Pompeo, who also spoke at the convention. So again, I will say very quickly, Afghanistan was a major, major piece of last night. The withdrawal that happened in other days where the 13 families that lost loved ones that were in the military, a debacle departure from Afghanistan, billions of dollars worth of equipment left behind, absolutely moving where these families came up. They obviously their hearts are broke. And because of the debacle that took place in Afghanistan. So when we look at the prophetic picture, how does this all play out? The strength against China, Revelation 16 talks about the kings of the East. President Trump, if he's elected, wants a strength against China. And that's something, of course, I want as well. And I think anyone that wants to be safe in our country, strength against what's taking place in the Middle East. So the same thing with Ukraine. Get that war done. Get it solved. Put Russia in their place. Strong rhetoric, if you will, but I think from what we saw in his first 4 years, I honestly believe he'll make good on those promises if indeed he's reelected to the presidency.
Well, before we leave that subject of foreign policy and how that is going to be impactful in places like the Middle East and Europe and China, if you could, you know, we are looking at a possible Biden administration running again, or maybe it might not. You mentioned earlier that there are many that are wanting him to step down and allow somebody else to run in his place on the Democratic ticket there. And so either a Biden administration or a Harris administration or whoever is going to be the one who runs, there's going to be tangible differences between the way they are going to handle the situation in the Middle East, especially when it comes to Israel. There's going to be a tangible difference, I believe. If you could you compare and contrast the difference between a Trump administration and a whoever is at the head of the Democratic Party, a Democratic administration, when it comes to how they're going to deal with Israel, how they're going to deal with Russia, and how they're going to have a foreign policy, like you said, that projects strength. Just compare and contrast those two, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I think it's very obvious to the American public that President Biden is, and I, with all due respect, is a flip-flopper when it comes to the support on Israel. Very, very, very political. We've seen it in our country, what the current administration has done. We have out-of-control protesting that has been taking place in our country. We have college campuses that are being overrun by individuals that are pro-Palestinian. This is very, very, very serious in our country right now. The rift that's been allowed to take place, the lawlessness in our own country that's taking place based on allowing this pro-Palestinian rhetoric to take place. We've watched President Biden and his administration worried about the optic of humanitarian aid in a country that we're sending weapons to. And then the debacle that took place with this floating pier, which as of yesterday from the news sources has literally been taken down now because it's been so ineffective. So, again, he is trying to, he meaning President Biden, has done this flip-flop between supporting Israel and supporting the Palestinians. I see that all as nothing more than political moves trying to get votes in our country. I don't see that happening with President Trump. He's made it very clear that the pro-Palestinian radicals, he wants them out of the country. That's a strong statement. Totally different than the President Biden administration. So again, no nonsense. We get back to a country that is follows the rule of law, that follows the Constitution. Stop all this flip-flopping, trying to please people. And I believe President Trump realizes what is it going to do to make America safe again and make America strong again. And using, of course, the rhetoric, if you will, that the left hates, make America great again. And I believe he put that platform out strongly over the last 4 days.
Pastor Schmidt, as we also continue to look at this, if we look at how the next president is going to impact on an international scale, but if we look here domestically on the situation, I know a big part of his speech last night was talking about immigration, was talking about securing the borders and not necessarily anti-immigration, but legal, lawful immigration and lawlessness around the country. Religious freedoms, I think that's something that could somewhat be on the ballot, either legal religious freedoms or the threat of a type of cancel culture. It's not popular. It's not really allowed to be a Christian or espouse Christian views because that is not the environment that is being fostered by the administration. If you could just a little bit talk about some of these domestic policies, some of these things internally that we should be concerned about as believers.
Well, again, the absolute problem in America right now and the absolute threat to our absolute safety is this illegal immigration issue. And again, I've heard numbers, you've heard numbers about 10 million individuals. I heard President Trump actually say up to 18 million a few days ago have gotten into our country. The issue is, and again, I go back to my law enforcement days, 10 years ago, there weren't enough agents to cover every single cell with one agent. They couldn't cover all the cells that exist in America. And this is not classified information. This was made public knowledge. The amount of terrorists in our country right now, if some imam, some head of the Islamic world says, listen, today's the day, just like on October 7th in Israel, we are in a world of hurt. We're not prepared for it. Our police agencies aren't prepared. The National Guard isn't on standby. All these different things. Folks, we are literally facing a catastrophic event should that happen. I believe strongly that President Trump, again, has made it very clear if he's elected that the borders, he made two major statements last night. Two things happen on day one. Number one, we go back to getting oil out of our country. And in his terms, quote unquote, drill baby drill. So to get our oil supply and become energy independent again. Second thing that he said very, very strongly regarding this was close the border. He's like, he's already built most of the border. He's just going to get it completed and no more of this nonsense of illegal immigrants coming in. And as you stated, if they come in legally and vetted properly, all good. But this nonsense of illegal terrorists coming into our country, threatening our very national security, absolutely must stop. You also mentioned the cancel culture, whereby people that are conservative Christian, that voice has been trying to be snuffed out by the current administration. They don't like where we stand. They don't like a biblical worldview. They like the LGBTQI plus agenda, the woke agenda, just causing tremendous division among our country. I honestly believe, from what I saw over the last 4 days, if President Trump is elected, and he pushed it hard last night, get America unified again. He actually pointed out a letter that his wife Melania had written about that very issue and made mention of that. So I honestly think that's what he wants. I believe that's the agenda that he's going to follow. I'm just looking forward over the next several months to seeing how all this is going to play out.
Well, Pastor Schmidt, as I'd like to wrap up our conversation here, as we are continuing to look at the political setting the stage for prophecy to be fulfilled, before I go, and this is now coming to you from, I'd like you to speak from a pastor's perspective. You know, I believe it is important for us to participate in government and to have a Christian worldview and to vote in a way that reflects our Christian worldview. And, you know, maybe we don't always have perfect choices to completely reflect our Christian worldview, but we do have to make a choice. Right now, it's a choice basically one or the other, and you have to look and see which one most reflects your Christian worldview. But in the end, we are not Democrats nor Republicans. We are Christians, and that is where our identity is. That is where our hope is. When we get to heaven, you know, we're not going to be judged on whether we were Democrats or Republicans, but whether we accepted the Lord Jesus Christ into our hearts and what we did with the knowledge that we had. So if you could just talk a little bit about the hope and wrap this up. And because our identity is in Jesus Christ and not in any political party, talk about what we have that's way better than a political affiliation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a key point. What separates the two things, the presidency versus being a Christian and a pastor? I encourage our people, listen, those that are talking about they may not vote because the president may not be the perfect moral, ethical person. When we go to the polls, we're not voting for a pastor. We're voting for an individual that's going to allow the Christian community to continue operating under the First Amendment of free speech, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly. So we need a person in the government that allows pastors, preachers, Christians to do the job that God's called us to do. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 20 makes it clear. God has called each and every one of us that is a Christian to keep pushing the gospel, to get it out every possible place we can. If the government shuts down our freedom of speech, freedom of religion, we have to go underground. It's not a good scenario. So again, what can God's people do? Well, number one, vet the candidates, make the choice that you believe is the strongest person that's going to go into government, not to be a pastor, but to be a president that's going to uphold our Constitution, our religious freedoms, and allow us to keep moving forward, if you will, as God's people. Second thing is we've got to stay firm. We've got to stick to our biblical principles. And number three, if we're not out there telling folks about Christ, then we can't complain about the way the country's going. That is the only thing that's going to change anyone's heart, is receiving the precious good news of the gospel, which is that Jesus Christ came into this world to save sinners. We've got to get that message out. We've got to see folks come to Christ, or we're just going to keep seeing a decline.
Well, we certainly are. And as Dad used to say, we've got to keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing is the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, as always, we appreciate you being on the program. We appreciate your insight. We appreciate your friendship to the ministry. Dr. Rich Schmidt from Prophecy Focus and Union Grove Baptist Church, thanks for being with us today, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Well, thanks so much for having me. God bless.
And Rich, we're going to have you back to talk about your new book coming out, Presidents, Politics, and Prophecy. Well, we've got to take a break, and when we come back, the Legacy Series with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, right here on Prophecy Today Weekend. Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung, Jr. Along with my brother Rick, we examine current events in the light of God's prophetic word.
Well, that's right, Jimmy. And you, as we mentioned in the previous segment, you had the chance to go to Montenegro. This is a ministry that both you and I have been involved with for 15 years now, essentially reaching young people with basketball, sports, art, different things, but sharing the gospel, and that is what we intend to do here. And Jimmy, this is an opportunity. We talked about it a little bit earlier. This is an opportunity for you to support our ministry. We here at Prophecy Today, we rely on the prayers and support of our listeners, and so we appreciate so much every time we get the chance. God always provides every time we get the chance to share the good news of the prophetic word and to go out and to
put feet to our faith to use that motivation that Bible prophecy gives us to get out and share the gospel with those that need it, share the gospel with a lost and dying world. Jimmy, if any of our listeners would like to do that, you can go to our website, prophecytoday.com. You look at the donate button there, you can find out how to mail it in or give online, and we greatly appreciate that.
Yes, we sure do. You know, and it benefits the people here in Montenegro because that allows us to come over. But it also will benefit you, the giver. Today on the Legacy Series with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, we are studying in the book of Zechariah. You know, the children of Israel are at the foot of Mount Sinai in our study. They're waiting to receive the Torah, the law, the Ten Commandments, the first five books of the Bible. They will also receive the instructions for the seven Jewish feast days. I know that we're studying the book of Zechariah, but we need to go to the book of Leviticus, chapter 23 and verse 2, for us to be able to understand these special Jewish feast days. That's Leviticus chapter 23, verse 2, as we continue our study today with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series.
The seven feasts are a narrative pointing to and include the redemptive story for the Jewish people. They're in Mount Sinai, in the Sinai desert. They're not into the promised land. These feasts are not going to be allowed to take place until they get into the promised land, except for the first two feasts, because they had already been established. The first feast that we see, look here at what he says now. He comes to Moses, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, verse 2, and say unto them, concerning the feast of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feast. Now look down in verse 4. These are the feast of the Lord, even holy convocations, which ye shall proclaim in their seasons, in their time. They are at a special time, and he's going to date them or tell you by counting a certain number of days when the feast should take place. Verse 5, in the 14th day of the first month, that month in our calendar would be basically the month of April. In the 14th day of the month of April, or in the 14th day of Nisan, which is the Jewish month, in the 14th day of the first month, at even, even is the time that begins a Jewish day. You know how a Jewish day is counted? A Jewish day starts at sundown and goes evening first and then day and concludes at sundown. The Sabbath begins Friday at sundown, concludes on Saturday at sundown. Why was that? Because God said in creation, and the evening and the day were the first day. And so they take God's description of a day. And now he says the Passover is going to begin in the evening part of the 14th day of the first month. In other words, as it did this year, Passover fell on Thursday, starting thus on Wednesday at sundown. Passover then began Wednesday evening, and that's when they had the Passover Seder, and that's when the Passover took place in the book of Exodus chapter 12, and that's when they're to observe the day of Passover. But the day of Passover continues all the way to the evening of the next day. This year it happened to conclude, go all the way to the evening of Thursday, and the day of Passover was set. And that's what they're talking about on the first, on the 14th day of the first month. Now look at the next. And so the first feast is Passover. Now look at the next. And by the way, what has happened today, and even at the time of Jesus Christ, the first two feasts have been combined as one, but they are distinctly two different feasts. It's essential that you understand, we don't go to what tradition brought in, we go to what God's Word says will take place. The first feast is on the 14th day of the first month, and that is Passover. Now look at verse 6. And on the 15th day, that's different than the 14th day, isn't it? Yes. On the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so the next feast is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And it says, as we continue to read there, 7 days ye must eat unleavened bread. In the first day ye shall have a holy convocation. The first day of this seven-day feast is a very important day. It's a holy convocation. It's a special high holy day. That's what holy convocation means. It's a very special, and this is important for you to remember, it's a very special high holy day. And so the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 7 days, they don't eat bread that's leavened. They eat unleavened bread, and that is, comes about by not putting yeast in your dough when you get it. And in fact, when they prepare the dough, if you keep it, if you don't have it in the oven, in 18 minutes, then it becomes leavened automatically. And so when they fix it, they have to have the bread, and meticulously it's taken care of. They take the dough and they get it into the oven in 18 minutes after they mixed it. And the bread is made. And then you have unleavened bread. It's a whole industry in the nation of Israel. Now look at verse 9. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye be come into the land. Here's where he's talking about now. When you come into the land, what land is he talking about? The promised land. Only when you come into the land. Not until then, until you come into the land, will you now observe all of these feasts together. When you come into the land which I give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, then ye shall bring a sheath of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. And he shall wave the sheath before the Lord to be accepted for you on the morrow. Here it is. Here's when it takes place. On the morrow after Shabbat, or the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. First fruits takes place on the day after Shabbat, or the day after Sabbath, or it's taking place on Sunday because Shabbat is on Saturday, which literally starts, this is confusing, just pay attention, buy the tape, you can go back and play it again, which literally starts on Friday evening at sundown. Okay? So the first day of the week, Sunday, starts on Saturday evening at sundown. Important to remember. I'll get back to it in a few moments. Okay, so the third feast now is first fruits. Look down here in verse 15. And ye shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from that day that ye brought the sheath of the wave offering. In other words, Sunday, right after the Sabbath, the morrow after the Sabbath, even seven Shabbats, even seven more Saturdays, even until the morrow after the seventh Shabbat, 50 days. You count seven Shabbats, that's 49 days. The next day is 50 days. The Septuagint used the word Pentecost for 50. It's the Feast of Harvest, or it's the Feast of Pentecost. There's different names, but just for our use now, it's called the Feast of Pentecost, coming 50 days after first fruits. Very important. And it comes on Sunday. As first fruits had to come on Sunday, so does Feast of Pentecost have to come on Sunday. Because it was seven Shabbats and the day after, which is Sunday. Okay, so now you have the Feast of Pentecost. There's the first four. Look over with me now, if you will. And by the way, what they do here, look at in verse 17, ye shall bring out of your habitation wave loaves of 2/10 deals that should be of fine flour. They shall be baken with leaven. Isn't that interesting? Before unleavened, now he's saying put leaven in it. Because we think that leaven represents sin, and that's not absolutely true. Why would he be saying put sin in it? You're going to weigh these before the Lord. Leaven has another meaning, I believe. It's to separate. Remember what happened in Exodus chapter 12? He said, take the lamb, prepare it. You have the lamb standing, all dressed. You put the bread in, but you're not going to have time to get, it becomes unleavened bread. And what was he trying to say with the unleavened bread? He was saying, look, from now on you'll celebrate this unleavened bread. Passover is celebrating you coming out of the bondage, out of captivity. Unleavened bread is an indicator of separation. You're leaving captivity. You're leaving your slavery. You're coming out of Egypt. Now I'm going to separate that. Because, see, before you had to continue to take a little bit of your bread, you know, and so make the next, in that time when they were making bread, the moms would have to get a little bit of that dough and save it for the next one and make some more and then save some of that. But now he says, cut that all off. I don't want any of that bread you had in bondage. I'm going to separate 7 days. And so leaven, in my opinion, more than referring to sin, is talking about separation, setting them apart from what they had been. And so now you eat the 7 days unleavened bread, and you go in. But now he comes to the Feast of Pentecost. You see, the first feast, they came in with a wave offering. It was the barley harvest that was being celebrated. Now it's the wheat harvest, 50 days later, the wheat harvest, and they come in and they've made 2 loaves, and the priest is supposed to come in with the 2 loaves of leavened bread, separation. Why? Well, you'll see what happens on Pentecost, and wave it before the Lord. Those are the first 4 feasts. They take place in the spring. They notice they're dealing very closely with harvest time, the agrarian society that the Jewish people were a part of. Very interesting study. Look at the next feast that's going to take place, verse 23 of chapter 23. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, in the 7th month, now we're talking about October, we were talking about April in the 1st month, now in the 7th month, on the 1st day of the month shall be a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets. This is Rosh Hashanah, the new year, or, by the way, this is a civil new year. How can you have the 1st month and now the 7th month being the first of the new year? Well, they have a religious new year, a spiritual new year, and a civil new year. The civil new year starts in the 7th month. I know you're all confused. Just pay attention and listen and take it in by faith. And so in the 7th month, on the 1st day, it's Rosh Hashanah, and it is the Feast of Trumpets. And they say, blow the trumpets, sound the alarm in Zion, as Joel says. Okay, so the Feast of Trumpets. Now, look in verse 26. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, also on the 10th day of the 7th month, 10 days later, after the Feast of Trumpets, there's going to be the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. The Feast of Yom Kippur, the Feast of the Day of Atonement. And during that 10-day period, what the Feast of Trumpets is to do is to call the nation of Israel to repentance. Now, for the 10 days after the Feast of Trumpets began, which is a 1-day feast, and the trumpets are sounded to alert the people, there is a time of repentance. I have had Jewish people call me, search out where I was during that 10-day period of time. Call me. They're the 10 awesome days. Call me and say, Jimmy, I want to confess that I treated you wrongly. Why? Because you were going into Yom Kippur. They were to repent during that 10-day period. The Feast of Trumpets was a call to repentance. That's what the whole purpose of it was.
A call to repentance, the 10 awesome days between the Feast of Trumpets and the solemn feast day of Yom Kippur, which is the fast of the Day of Atonement.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and the Legacy Series. We've got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk to an area missionary here in Montenegro, right here on Prophecy Today Weekend.
I'm Jeremy Scott with Mission Network News. It's nearly a week since former U.S. President Donald Trump was almost killed in an assassination attempt Saturday. Trump is the Republican candidate in this year's U.S. presidential election. For American citizens, it was a shocking moment, but for military service members, law enforcement, and veterans, the attack uniquely impacted them. More information continues to come out about the leadership and security errors that failed to stop the attack. Steve Prince with Warrior Set Free says it's a critical reminder to be praying for our law enforcement and military.
So when we pray for law enforcement and you think about the worst places at the worst times, that's where they have to be. Pray for divine protection. Pray for divine decision making. Pray for them to be alert.
Meanwhile, drugs and alcohol define a lot of lives on the Northridge Reservation. Distribution is bold and relentless, and too many people have decided there is no reason to go on living. Yet a recent visit by the On Eagles Wings team injected hope. Ron Hutchcraft of Hutchcraft Ministry says that's the point of the On Eagles Wings Summer of Hope outreach, introducing desperate people to the hope of Christ.
Hope is defiant confidence. In the most brutal winter days, you have this defiant confidence that says there's going to be flowers sometime here soon. That's kind of a picture of hope. In terms of reaching out to Native America, where hope is so rare.
From July 6th to August 1st, dozens of Native American Christians are sharing their hope stories on reservations throughout the United States. Pray many lives will change as a result. Thank you for listening to Mission Network News, a service of One Way Ministries. We're listener-supported by people like you. Join us here on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, LinkedIn. You can now also find us on Alexa, iTunes, or TWR360. Together, the Great Commission happens. Look for the links at missionnews.org. That's missionnews.org. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Prophecy Today. I'm Jimmy DeYoung Jr. And along with Rick, we've been examining current events in the light of God's prophetic word.
As I stated at the beginning of the program, I'm in Montenegro, Rick, and it's one of those areas where you and I worked for many years. And I'm here now with one of our good friends.
He's a Serbian working here in Montenegro, Daniel Petkoski.
Daniel, how many years have you been here in Montenegro?
I came in Montenegro since 2009. I studied in Belgrade mechanical engineering, and God called me to do the ministry in Montenegro, and then I decided to move in 2009 over here.
Wow. You know, Daniel, I will tell you, in a country with few spiritual leaders in the country,
mm-hmm.
I know that you are one of them that's helping spread the gospel,
mm-hmm.
carrying forth the Great Commission.
Yes.
You're not only evangelizing, but you're making disciples.
Yes.
I've seen that firsthand. In fact, we're in the youth center that was put up here in Nikšić, which is the town where we are, and we're doing our ministry here. But how many believers, as we would term, believers in Jesus Christ?
Yes, believers in Jesus Christ, in the terms of us evangelicals, there is now, at this point, about 250 in the whole country. I do believe there is individual believers inside the big institutions like Orthodox or Catholics. There is people who believe in Christ. So in that matter, I meet, but there are quite few who honestly love God and doing good deeds among other people. There is a lot of political propaganda through both of these institutions and defending whether it's their national rights or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And as a missionary, how are you received here in sharing and evangelizing and working in the cities?
Most of people are thinking that I'm some kind of a part of a cult, mm-hmm. and a sect who wants to brainwash them and do something. And so the good thing is that I have Bible on my side and God. So, because when people start arguing and put some arguments, I would usually like, hey, look at the Bible. And Bible is saying that. So majority of people never open the Bible in their life, mm-hmm. not read it. So that's what I'm trying to do, is to encourage people to come and read the Bible, whether it's together with me or in the small group or join the bigger group of Bible readers and seeking Bible, seeker Bible study groups. And so we do all sorts of different things during the year just to encourage people to look at Jesus. And I'm trying to do my part of job, and I know God is faithful. He will do his part of job.
Yep.
And that is to touch people and to convert their lives.
One of the things that I've witnessed as you were here, and I know taking forth the Great Commission, mm-hmm. is making disciples. And I've seen that. Not only have you
talked and you're helping guide our young people in personal evangelism and how to witness here. As we all know, mission trips are really more, in a sense, they give more to the people that come because it opens their eyes. Mm-hmm. Like Americans that come to a foreign field.
Yeah.
It opens their eyes to what's there. Mm. But you're making disciples here, not only with our kids, but with your young people in the area that you have Bible studies with and that you meet with.
Mm. Yes. It's a hard process. It's a long process. It's a really... it's a walk together with people. So there is different kind of, simply said, you just have to be part of their life. You have to have your life open to them, and you hope that they're going to open their life. As I like to say, you open your life, you open your fridge, you open your wallet, you give your car, you give your house, you open everything for them. Because that's how Jesus basically made disciples. He walked with them 3 years. They slept together. They ate together. They spent all the time together. And basically witnessing with your life. Because a lot of people want to see, are you walking the talk, what you're saying. Because we had so many, whether it's politicians or leaders, promising so many things, and they all failed.
Yep.
So people don't trust many of public speakers. They're like, oh, he's speaking like this, but who knows what he's doing when the door is closed.
Right.
You know, so it's basically you have to have integrity in life and just witnessing. So when the missionaries want to come and help and so on, I just say, just come and leave.
Yes.
Pay your bills. Go in the post office. Whatever you do, there's plenty of...
Live your life.
Live your life. Yeah. Live your life as a Christian, and people will see it. And then they will see it. It's true. Like Abraham, when the Sodom and had the problems with other people who came to conquer them, they came to Abraham because they knew that he will help them, even though he doesn't share the same beliefs as them. And they know the address where to knock the door.
Yep. In these days, why is this important? Why? I mean, obviously, you feel God's calling on your life to do this.
Yeah.
It's not easy. Mm. It's tough. In a country that has 0.008 of the population is even interested in being a believer in Jesus Christ. Why do you continue to do this?
Because I am more than convinced that this is the best way. This is the truth. Especially in this time of instant everything, people search for instant solution on internet and so on, especially with young people. They try to find answers. They don't ask their mom and dad anymore. They don't go to the priest or whoever. They ask Mr. Google about every question they have. And over there is all sorts of people who they don't understand that that's made for profit. That's made for money, not really caring about their soul, not really caring about them. And God is the one who cares about them. God is the one who loves them. He even loved them so much that he gave his life. And I want to share that message to them and to know that God is true love. He really cares for them, like not just caring about their clicks or money or whatever.
Right. I know you have a favorite verse. I know one for your ministry that has helped you that really is one that's in your head always as you're walking the streets here and teaching and working and carrying on amongst and fighting and living life in this area. What's that verse?
For me, it's basically the whole letter of Philippians. I just love how many times it says rejoice, 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 rejoice. And so many times. And for me, it's just like because Paul is trying to to encourage people that there's people who are doing many things for many wrong reasons. But in spite of all of that, rejoice.
Daniel, thank you so much. We continue to pray for your ministry here in the country and looking forward to working with you this week at Camp Monte.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to Camp Monte.
Paul's exhortation to us was to rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. But with everything that's happening in our world, the rapture can't be too far away. Let's keep looking up until.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Jay Johnson inviting you to join us again next week for more of Prophecy Today. Prophecy Today is a listener-supported production of Shofar Communications in Chattanooga, Tennessee.